Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Hey, welcome. We hope you are having a great day. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Monson, and it is just great to be here. Can't believe that we are through Labor Day weekend, and we're off to a start. So, how you doing, Mom?
Woo! We're jamming out here.
I guess so,
yeah. We're starting off Tuesday with power.
With power. Then you got it. Yep. Did you have a good weekend?
Great weekend. I always love to add that extra day on there so I can get a little bit more non-work done. I like to get non-work done on Labor Day.
I know.
Because I celebrate the fact that I'm healthy enough to work and that I don't have to on that day.
Okay, well, I'm glad. And you know, we have a great show today. We are the AmeriChicks. Check out our website, AmeriChicks.com. All kinds of great information there. All of our past shows are archived there. And we are sleuths for truth. We educate, inspire, and engage. And we are dissecting issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. Very excited to have in studio with us today, Rob Nadelson. Rob, great to have you.
It's great to be back, Kim.
Okay. And it's going to be a really interesting show today. I was talking to somebody and said, you're definitely going to want to listen. We were talking about Thomas Jefferson last night. And I said,
Of
course I am. Yeah.
You're Kim Monson, the Queen of Liberty and Freedom.
Yeah.
Some people have social lives.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, poor Kim. You got to get out more.
I guess that's
true. She took that Labor Day word seriously.
I guess so. Hey, I had a great Labor Day. I went out to California and for some family stuff, and then went out and visited the USS Midway, which is a aircraft carrier. It's now a museum. It was absolutely fascinating. Okay, you're both shaking your head. I love that stuff, you guys. I just love it. And of course, the Battle of Midway in World War II really was a turning point because it was that battle that the United States sunk four Japanese air carriers. So it was a really big deal. So.
Well, that is a good deal because you know that the Japanese, they were ruthless in coming after people, and the kamikaze guys were really bad. So I'm glad that that happened.
Yeah. So anyway, it was really a great time. We're back, kind of getting back in the saddle on everything. And there's a lot that's been going on. I didn't quite know what to choose with so many different things, but there's some biggies. The first is DACA, which is the Dreamers Act, or I guess it wasn't an act, it was an executive order. And Donald Trump said that he was going to, get rid of the Dream Act. In essence, now it's kind of like he's moving it over to Congress. I think that's probably where it needs to be. But we have Rob Nadelson in the studio. Rob, what do you think?
That's where it needs to be. I agree. The president has a certain power to issue executive orders, but they either have to be part of his duties of overseeing the executive branch, or they have to be authorized by statute. And the best study I've ever seen suggests that he really exceeded his authority.
Obama
exceeded his authority. And this really needs to be a matter for Congress.
Okay.
And, you know, I've been watching kind of the people going back and forth, and you've got, you know, both sides of the aisle, even Senator Dianne Feinstein. Mm-hmm. Is that how you say it?
Feinstein.
Democrat. She said, you know, it was on legal shaky ground. I think there were maybe 10 different states that were going to sue saying that DACA wasn't legal. And so it's time to get this passed in a way that we know what the rules really are for these guys. I mean, these kids, it sounds like it's only a 2-year permit and they have to keep applying over and over again. How is that helpful if there's so much uncertainty for these illegal kids that they don't know what's going to happen 2 years from now? How can they really, you know, get their roots in and really start to feel confident and go get a job and go, you know, do what they need to do to become prosperous? I think it makes sense to pass whatever we need to do the legal way through Congress so that we really have immigration reform that makes it easier for the people who want to come to America to come to America for the right reasons. And let us know if there are people that are coming for bad purposes to keep them out. Why don't we have real immigration reform?
Well, you know, Molly, go ahead, Rob.
I was going to say even President Obama recognized he was on shaky legal ground. I mean, you probably have heard some of the talk shows where they're playing over his statement that he was limited as to what he could do regarding the issue of Dreamers. Your question, Molly, does this really make sense to make people constantly reapply every 2 years, has kind of an ugly answer. And the ugly answer is it made political sense. A lot of things that don't make any business sense or objective sense make political sense. And this had the advantage of keeping Dreamers and others, their family members, dangling year after year. And, you know, that would mean that they would get to the polls and vote for the right people.
Oh.
A lot of politics right now, and this is completely opposite from what the founders wanted, but a lot of politics is driven by the idea that we'll have a certain dependent class on a particular program or a particular rule, and then we can manipulate that class to vote for us. Unfortunately, I think that's what was behind this.
Well, I think so, too. And so one of the things, and what I was going to say about that, Rob, is that I think that there should be a long path to citizenship, a long path to being able to vote, because I think that there are some bigger ulterior motives from a political standpoint,
right,
of trying to, you know, give Dreamers citizenship. So I think it has to be a long road, and there's no jump in the line in front of everybody else that's coming here to become a citizen. And, you know, many times, Molly, is a long period of time, and it's a lot of money to be able to do that. And I don't think that it's fair for somebody to jump the line in front of all those folks.
I agree. And I think that the people who want to come here legally because they want to be in America want to come because they like the fact that we have our laws and that we enforce our laws and that they're equal to everybody that's a citizen here. So I think it would benefit people wanting to move here that we enforce our own laws. But also I think that and then let's, if you're cool after the commercial, let's go a little bit more on this, because one more thing I wanted to say. I love the fact that President Trump is weaning this off over 6 months, so it's really lighting a fire under Congress to actually have to pass something. Our own Congressman Kaufman said, why don't we wait 3 years? Why? Because then it will take you 3 years to get it done. You think we're that silly?
Bookkeeping, accounting, and taxes, oh my. No need to worry about your company or personal finances with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company are certified public accountants who offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company strives to take a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs and situation. Give Predovich & Company a call at 303-791-3000 or check out their website at dpredovich.com and be sure to tell them the Americhex sent you.
In a world of uncertainty, anything can happen. It pays to protect yourself, your family, your business, your home, and your car. And it pays to work with the proven professionals at Alliance Insurance Services. Jeremy McCallum and his Alliance Insurance Services team work with a variety of insurance companies competing for your business. Jeremy and the Alliance Insurance Services team helps you find the right insurance at the right price. They know you'll sleep better at night knowing Alliance Insurance Services is handling all of your insurance needs. Give them a call today at 303-431-9351. That's 303-431-9351. And be sure to tell them the Americhex sent you. Have a great night out and watch the best movies under the stars at the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. Beginning Friday, September 1st, the features at 88 Drive-In will include Annabelle, Creation, Atomic Blonde, Dunkirk, and Exit. Box office opens at 6 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, 7 p.m. Sunday through Thursday. Admission includes all features. The pizza special runs Monday through Thursday. Receive one 12-inch pizza and two 16-ounce sodas, all for $11. The pizzas are served fresh and hot from their oven. They are a staff favorite. May they suggest a warm funnel cake for dessert? They have added a fifth topping. Try their Fluffernutter funnel cake. What's a Fluffernutter funnel cake? It's a delightful mixture of marshmallow cream and peanut butter topping. Yum.
Hey, welcome back to the Americhex Show. Molly and Kim, and in studio with us today is Rob Nadelson, and he's going to be with us at least once a month from now on.
I love it.
So be sure to tune in on that first Monday of the month, and if it's a holiday, the Tuesday.
That's why he's here on Tuesday.
For the most part. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So, Rob, obviously we go to you a lot for Constitution explanations. What did our founders originally mean when they put into writing these words? And so let's just really quickly continue a little bit with the DACA, because this is a big topic today. President Trump rescinded the initiative that Obama put in place in 2012, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And the reason he said he's doing this is because it wasn't legally passed. It was an executive order. And so now he's saying, let's send it to Congress as we should so that they actually pass immigration reform that makes sense and is in place forever. Because an executive order can change anytime you get a new president in place. And that's not compassionate for anybody who's in this country and doesn't know the rule of law, that it's just going to change on a whim. But in talking about illegal immigration with you, Rob, in the past, and President Trump's ability to put a travel ban in place, some people said he was legally allowed to do that. Some said he wasn't. Do you mind walking us through what the president is legally allowed to do with immigration and what Congress must do?
Okay. In the Constitution, there's a list of powers that Congress has, and one of the powers is the power over naturalization, becoming a citizen, and another is called the power to define and punish offenses against the law of nations. That includes the issue of immigration. So in their beginning, this whole issue of immigration and naturalization, these are congressional responsibilities. Congress has passed a variety of laws to implement its responsibility. One of those laws gave to the president widespread authority to ban the travel into the country of essentially any aliens he didn't like, you know, or that he thought were a risk. And President Trump acted under that authority, and I think he acted properly under that authority. Some people claimed that he was violating the Constitution because he was discriminating against Muslims, and that was in breach of the First Amendment. I don't agree with that. But his basic authority to issue that ban came from a congressional law, which in turn came from the Constitution. Now, we also have other laws governing immigration. The president has some discretionary authority as to how vigorously he enforces those laws. But by the reports I've seen, President Obama abused that. He went too far and essentially nullify the law itself in issuing this DACA order. So now President Trump has said what we need to do is to send it back to Congress. And I think that's right. This is where the issue belongs, is in Congress. Irrespective of what your position is on immigration or what your position is on legal immigration, we should understand that we have procedures for dealing with these issues. And one of them is, these decisions ultimately are made by Congress, and another one is, once Congress passes a law, the law is to be enforced, not voided at the whim of the president.
Great. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, hopefully within the next 6 months, we'll get something passed.
Well, I want to say something else on this politically, too. This afternoon, I heard another talk show host who will remain nameless, except he is on one of the evil competitor stations, saying that if we don't reverse DACA, that this will essentially guarantee a Democratic majority forever, because all these people will eventually come in and vote after they're naturalized, and then they'll all vote for Democrats, and that will continue forever. I'm not that pessimistic, frankly. The whole history of America is one of immigrants coming into this country. Whatever initial loyalties they may have tend to disappear in a few years. African-Americans, for example, who now vote overwhelmingly for Democrats, up until the time of the New Deal, voted for Republicans mostly. Same thing was true with Jews. Jews tended to vote Republican at one time, then they became Democrats. Now they're switching back. And the record of other immigrant groups is even more dramatic, especially once they start getting onto the economic ladder and moving up the escalator, then their voting patterns change. So I think that admitting people or not admitting people, that decision should never be made based on whom they might vote for. But if the Democrats think that if we can admit a whole ton of Hispanics, we're in power forever, the Democrats are deluding themselves if they think that.
Interesting, because I have felt that there has been kind of a big
chess game on this.
But it's and there's no question that if, for example, you admitted a large number of Hispanics right away, that would I think be for the short term benefit of the Democrats. But politics is a very fluid thing. The economy is a very fluid thing. Hispanics in this country, to mention one particular immigrant group, have shown their ability to move up the scale and move up fast. And as people move up the scale, they tend to change their voting patterns.
I think the thing that concerns me, though, Rob, about that is that, when you have the redistricting, you can start to gerrymander, which would make it very difficult in elections. And then I think that they want to try to start to do some funny stuff with the Electoral College. So, I think I'm a little concerned. Would we have enough time for these new immigrant groups to come in and, get established and realize and learn about the American dream, capitalism, all those things? Or would it be to a point where it would be so difficult to have anything other than a Democrat majority?
I can't answer that question. All I can tell you is based upon history, immigrant groups tend to change their voting patterns over time as they move up. And secondly, as anyone who knows a significant number of immigrants knows, naturalized Americans are among the fiercely patriotic, most fiercely patriotic. Exhibit A is my mother, Florence Nadelson, who is an immigrant from Canada. You don't encounter very many people more patriotic than she is for the United States of America. And she didn't even come as a result of oppression or anything like that, but she took to her native land, to her adopted land.
But because Rob and Kim, I think that if somebody consciously makes that decision to move to another country, they do it with intention for a reason, because I know the laws there are going to be more fair and give more opportunity to me and my family to move up than where I am today. Then they choose to come. They do it the legal way. And then that way they vote in the way that's going to benefit their family, which is probably for safety and security. But like with DACA, what we did basically when President Trump passed this deferred action for childhood arrivals. President Obama, sorry. Basically, he was incentivizing people to come here illegally, saying it's okay, hurry over the border for whatever reason. We don't care. We're going to make it legal for you. And then, like you said, Rob, keep them. They have to keep applying every 2 years, keep them coming back so that they never really feel safe and secure and go on and become legal citizens the right way and work hard and pay taxes and feel safe. Because when they feel safe, then they add to the community.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that's one reason why we need to clear this mess up. I mean, it was another mess created by Mr. Obama. I don't know how much sense President Obama has of history. I don't think he could have had much if he promoted Obamacare, given the history of government health care in this country. But he probably viewed this as a short-term way to help the Democrats. And maybe he viewed it as a long-term way. Very cynical and unfortunate and cruel to people.
It is
very cruel to people. Hopefully Congress will straighten it out.
Yep.
Right. And an open border is cruel as well. Molly and I were down, this was a couple of years ago, when we were down in Texas and we were at a luncheon and some people said, have you heard anything about the rape trees down by the border? And we hadn't. And quite frankly, many of the coyotes, the guys that are bringing people across the border, they would throw like purses and underwear and things up on these trees to signify, some of the stuff that they'd done. And I thought about it. Molly and I were just incredulous. We couldn't believe it. And so it is absolutely cruel to allow that to happen. There's no compassion in that whatsoever.
This is part of what the rule of law is about. I mean, people hear the word rule of law, their eyes kind of go, glaze over. The rule of law is one of the kindest things that we can do, because it provides people with guidelines. It tells them what will happen if they do certain things, what will happen if they don't do certain things. It tends to take away false hopes and to foster true hopes. It's a way of providing security and safety to people's lives. We've talked about the crumbling of the rule of law in the United States. It is a cruel thing. Hopefully we're on the path to restoring it.
Mm-hmm. Rob Nadelson, I have never heard that put that way. That is absolutely beautiful.
Well, thank you.
Well, but it totally makes sense, because the reason we don't want a dictator, even if he believes with us, we don't want rules to change every time the dictator
That's
changes.
Right.
We want always to be protected, regardless of if it's a Republican or a Democrat or whoever's in place. And that's the safest for all.
And this was, as I mentioned before, this idea of the 2-year renewal, that's an inherent negation of the whole idea of the rule of law. When you pass a rule, it's supposed to be reasonably permanent. But under the current regime, people are simply left dangling, and it's cruel.
Okay. So real quick, I want to ask you guys your opinion on the Harvey. We're talking about Congress is now looking at Harvey. They're saying we want to put together some funding for the relief, and the House is voting on about $7.9 billion, and then it's going to go to the Senate, where the Senate says they aren't going to let that be pure. They're going to add to that a required increase in the debt ceiling, because if they don't do that by the end of September, then they're going to start defaulting. What are your thoughts?
Well, these machinations that you're describing is a good reason why we have such a big national debt. Congress was supposed to be limited under the Constitution to spending for a limited number of very important things, like national defense, for example. What the Supreme Court did when it started ignoring the Constitution's restrictions on what Congress can spend is they turned Congress into a big auction house. And that's what you see going on right now. Well, you know, I'll throw in X billion dollars for Harvey. Well, I'll throw in X billion dollars for a museum in Canton, Ohio. I'll throw in $1 million for a law school in Missoula or whatever. This is what now goes on.
Electric
in,
cars.
In Congress. Look, I'm going to say something that's going to sound cruel, but I think it's ultimately not. I think it's actually kind. The Constitution does not give Congress the power to spend money for general disaster bailouts, period. It just doesn't. I realize that the Supreme Court disagrees with me on this. With all due respect, you're wrong. It doesn't. Let me give a quick story. In 1796, only 7 years after the Constitution was implemented, the city of Savannah, Georgia, experienced a terrible fire. And the city fathers of Savannah and other people from the state of Georgia approached Congress and asked for a bailout. And Congress responded, well, we can spend money only for general welfare purposes. We can't simply develop a package for Savannah. And their response was, well, you know, Savannah isn't just any city. Savannah is an important port in the United States. It's national implications. And Congress's response, remember, this is a Congress that knew what the Constitution meant, was no, there will be no bailout. Under a constitutional regime, bailouts would come from the private sector, and they would come from the states involved.
All right. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim and Rob Nadelson on KDMT. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
If you're a veteran looking to purchase a home, choose the local experts, Kim Sturtz and Mark Cook at Home Mortgage Alliance. VA loans offer qualifying veterans the option to buy without a down payment. And since these loans are government insured, limited closing fees. Active duty military, reserves, National Guard, retired military, and surviving spouses may qualify. Give Kim Sturtz or Mark Cook at Home Mortgage Alliance a call today at 303-888-2732. Or check them out on the AmeriChicks referral list at AmeriChicks.com. Home Mortgage Alliance LLC is an approved FHA lender and sponsored agent of VA loans. NMLS number 1137507.
When buying or selling your home, you need a top-notch negotiator with experience. Award-winning RE/MAX Alliance Realtor Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 25 years. Karen Levine is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Let Karen help you find the right home for your lifestyle. Call Karen at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation. That's 303-877-7516. Or visit her online at Karen-Levine.com and tell her the AmeriChicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back. Yes, we are the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. We have Rob Nadelson in studio with us. He is a constitutional guru. Oh, my gosh. What I learned in that last segment regarding the rule of law, that it is kind because it takes away false hopes and it nurtures true hopes. Boy, Rob Nadelson, thank you so much for that nugget of wisdom on that.
Makes me think I ought to grow a beard like most gurus.
And you'd be in style, too.
Yeah.
Then you got to get a bun on the top of your head,
sit
though.
In the lotus position. You know?
But we are the AmeriChicks. Check out our website. We have all of our past shows archived there. There's all kinds of great information. And we are the AmeriChicks on Facebook as well as Twitter. And then also we've got this great I Am a Movement, a Facebook page as well, that we are doing some really cool stuff. So, Rob Nadelson, it is so great to have you in studio. Molly, I'm going to let you do the segue on this because you had kind of set this up. So why don't you do that?
Well, what Rob does in his spare time is he researches history. He goes back to legal history. What were the founding fathers thinking? What did they mean when they put into place the Constitution and the words here? And he has sent us something recently on John Dickinson. We are this month just passing the 250th anniversary of his farmer letters from 1767 this year, and why it's important to know what was in the farmer's letters. We're going to talk about that. We're going to let Rob explain it to us. But basically what John did is he made the case against British taxation and laid the foundation for the Constitution and separation of powers, not only between, you know, the three different areas, but also between the federal government and the state governments. And so it's important to know what he said and why he was so important to the founding.
Yeah, I have an op-ed coming in out on this topic, and also every year I speak at Constitution Week in Grand Lake, which is coming up this coming week.
We're going to be there too.
Yeah, you're going to be there too, yeah. Right? We'll be on different days, but I'm going to be talking about John Dickinson. And as Molly, you just said, it is the 250th anniversary of Dickinson's most famous writings, which were called The Letters from a Farmer in Pennsylvania. Most people have never heard of John Dickinson, but he was an extraordinarily important American founder. And the farmer letters were his most important writing for several reasons. One, he was the person more than any other who ginned up the idea of no taxation without representation. That wasn't his phrase, but it was his arguments that galvanized people to make that position stick. In addition, he began the process in the farmer letters and then in later publications as well, of helping to crystallize the American idea of what powers ought to be handled by the central government and what powers ought to be handled locally. Now, when he first started writing on this subject, he was saying, well, London ought to have the power, the center of the British Empire ought to have the power to regulate trade or to handle foreign relations, and we in the colonies ought to have the power to tax ourselves and run our own judicial systems. And he developed this more and more as time went on. And eventually, the balance or the structure that he and other American pamphleteers worked out before the Revolution was essentially adopted in the U.S. Constitution. You know, the U.S. Constitution wasn't created out of nothing. It was created from an enormous and very long tradition. And part of that tradition was the colonists' ideas, and especially Dickinson's ideas, of what should be handled by a central federal government and what should be handled by the states.
Well, and he wrote this, Rob Nadelson, he wrote this 20 years before the Constitution was created and then ultimately ratified.
Why don't we say a little bit about the man so people become more familiar with him?
Let's do it.
Yeah, John Dickinson was born in 1732, the same year that that George Washington was born. And his father was a planter, a farmer, in Maryland and Delaware, although he came to be, grew up more in Delaware. He got a good classical education, Greek and Roman education, knowledge of the Greek and Roman classics. He then worked in a law office for a year in Philadelphia, and then he went to England, and he studied at the Middle Temple, which is one of the institutions that trains English barristers. In fact, when I was in England in 2005 and did a lot of my research, much of it was done also at the Middle Temple using the same books that Dickinson had used.
Neat.
And we still have his letters, the letters that he wrote to his dad from London. He then came back to Pennsylvania to practice law, and he was apparently one of these guys who was charismatic because he was back only about 3 years when he got elected to the Pennsylvania legislature. And he made his mark in the Pennsylvania legislature, especially with a speech in 1764 in which he took on Ben Franklin regarding a plan that Ben Franklin had, and Dickinson ultimately won, and Ben Franklin was proven wrong, and Dickinson was proven right. Then when Parliament adopted the Stamp Act, nine states got together in what was called the Stamp Act Congress to brainstorm ways of opposing the Stamp Act. Pennsylvania sent John Dickinson as one of their representatives, and when the manifestos, that the pronouncements came out of the Stamp Act Congress, most of it was written by John Dickinson. And then when Parliament passed these Navigation Acts, the taxes on tea and glass and paper and certain other things, it was Dickinson who led the charge through these letters. These letters, which are really newspaper op-eds, just took the colonies by storm. They were reprinted everywhere, and people quickly found out who the author was. And Dickinson was the toast of America. They were reprinted also in Europe and in Britain. And John Dickinson at that point became the most famous American in the world, next to Ben Franklin. Dickinson continued to, when the Continental Congress first met in 1774, he was a member of the Continental Congress, and he continued to do most of the writing for Congress in 1774, 1775, early 1776. However, Dickinson thought the Declaration of Independence was premature, and so he did not support it, and he had to retire from politics. He went to join the American Army. He fought on the American side. But he opposed.
So he thought the Declaration was premature, but then he went and served in the armed forces.
Right. And he was the only member of Congress at the time who, other than Washington, of course, who was already in the field, he was the only founder who did that, who said, even though I oppose the decision, I'm going to support it.
Wow.
And there's more backstories to that as well, but we don't have time to get into them. In 1779, Dickinson returned to Congress, where he continued to play an important role. In 1781, the state of Delaware elected him their president, what they called the governor at the time. In 1782, only a year later, the state of Pennsylvania elected him their president because he had homes in both states. And he served.
He didn't serve them concurrently, did he?
It was about 2 months. About 2 months in Delaware, he resigned, then moved to Philadelphia and served as a president of Philadelphia for 3 years, which was the maximum permitted. Many of our listeners may have heard of the Annapolis Convention, the group that actually put together the big recommendation for the Constitutional Convention. Who was the president of the Annapolis Convention? Surprise, it was John Dickinson.
Wow.
Right. And so finally, there comes the Constitutional Convention, and Dickinson was, again, a delegate, this time from Delaware, and a very influential member of the convention. An interesting fact here, we always knew who he was influential in the drafting of the Constitution, and I can give some examples if we need them, but we always knew that he was influential. But it wasn't until the year 1983, when we rediscovered his convention notes that we realized how influential he really had been.
That is amazing, Rob Needleson.
So after the Constitutional Convention, he then wrote a series of articles, influential articles, which urged the ratification of the Constitution. By that time, he's 56 years old. That's relatively old for the time. He's plagued by ill health. And so he retires. He went on to live for another 19, 20 years, but he stayed mostly at home. But he did write occasional newspaper articles and maintain a correspondence, a very active correspondence with people all over the country, including with Thomas Jefferson when Jefferson was president. So that's a thumbnail sketch of one of our very greatest founders, John Dickinson, a person who one of our greatest constitutional historians has called the most underrated founder. I think that's true.
Now, Rob Needleson, you're going to be talking about John Dickinson up at the Grand Lake U.S. Constitution Week, which is the only Constitution Week of its kind in the country. Is that going to be on Monday,
Monday
night, the 11th, right?
Yeah, right.
Boy.
They chose 9/11 for me.
I think that's going to be just fascinating. So how long will you be speaking? Because just this little, you know, primer on this has been really fascinating.
Well, if I were Patrick Henry, I'd probably speak for 6 hours. But since I'm Rob Nadelson, it'll probably be about 45 minutes.
Okay.
And then we'll take Q&A. In case listeners are not familiar with Grand Lake Constitution Week, it is truly a lot of fun. I mean, speakers, parades, Constitution trivia, as well as having an opportunity to stay in a very beautiful place, Grand Lake, Colorado, just on the western side of Rocky Mountain National Park.
Great. And Molly and I will be there. We're going up on Friday, and we'll be the MCs for the main event on Saturday. And that's U.S. Constitution Week up in Grand Lake. It'll be the 11th through the 16th. We're with Rob Nadelson. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
And now, the Lens of Liberty. Here is Helen Krebel.
A couple in Connecticut decided to let their kids walk home from school alone every day, like many of us did growing up. But nowadays, people are so worried about overprotecting children that somebody called the police, and the parents are now charged with a crime. But these parents are fighting back. They're part of a new movement called Free Range Parenting, an effort to raise future independent adults. We all want children to feel safe, but good citizenship also requires that they become self-reliant. Looking through the lens of liberty, we see that America only remains free if we all take responsibility for ourselves and our children, not rely on the government. Do we really want free-range chickens but cooped-up kids?
For more information, go to lensofliberty.org. That's lensofliberty.org.
Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. We have in studio with us Rob Nadelson. Fascinating conversation regarding John Dickinson, who was one of the American founders of First Rank, he said, and really laid the groundwork for the Constitution and these questions about taxation. And so let's talk a little bit about how that relates to today, Rob Nadelson.
Well, let me kind of pinpoint that question even a little bit more, because there's a lot of protesting and violence taking place today. And we look at Martin Luther King, and he was telling us that we should protest peacefully and that we would get more done that way. And he was a great leader in that. Today we have a lot of violence going behind the protest by guys like Antifa and other groups. But I was reading through the farmers' letters, Rob Nadelson, that you sent us. And he gave some ideas of the best way free people should respond to government usurpations. Walk us through his ideas.
Dickinson was a cautious man and in many ways a moderate man. And his position was the free people have to insist upon every right to which they're entitled, but not carry it beyond that. So he would say that the first thing to do when you encounter an abusive law or an unconstitutional law is you petition for its repeal. You know, you lobby your representatives, and you generally make noise and say that you want it to be repealed. If that doesn't work, the next step is noncompliance, peaceful noncompliance with the law. This is what Martin Luther King did. And only if the usurpations continue and peaceful resistance doesn't work do you engage in violence. If violence is the last resort. Ultimately, Dickinson supported the revolution, but he realized that peaceful resistance hadn't worked. So that's why he supported it.
Awesome. And tell me about this quote. I want to know about that one.
Okay. The quote is, "A perpetual jealousy regarding liberty is absolutely required in all free states. Slavery is ever preceded by sleep." Perpetual jealousy regarding liberty is absolutely required in all free states. You can't ever forget what it means to be free and that we need to do what's necessary to keep our freedom. We shouldn't sleep on our rights, as the lawyers say. Slavery is ever preceded by sleep. But he actually borrowed that from Machiavelli, the point being that when people go to sleep and they don't vigilantly protect their liberty, that's when they lose it.
Mm-hmm. Rob Nadelson, you've said that John Dickinson really made the case against British taxation. As we look through the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, we see the Founding Fathers making their case back and forth for creating a government. And some said, well, we don't want it to be too big, back and forth. How did John Dickinson make the case against British taxation?
Okay. John Dickinson was a believer in natural law, but his primary arguments in the Farmer Letters were British constitutional arguments. British subjects had a treasured right not to have their property taken from them without their consent. What that meant was that they shouldn't be taxed either without their individual consent or by the consent of their representatives in Parliament. Well, the Americans had no representatives in politics, in Parliament. The Americans were British subjects, but they were not represented in the British Parliament. Where they were represented was in the different colonial assemblies. Each colony had its freely elected lower house. And his position, therefore, was that any tax that is imposed on the colonists has to come from the local legislature. He also made the point that there are certain other responsibilities, like the administration of justice, that need to remain locally, that cannot be dictated by the central government. On the other hand, he said that if the question involves, let's say, regulating the flow of goods among units of the British Empire, in other words, you needed regulation to govern how goods flow between Bermuda and the Bahamas and Jamaica and Virginia and London, only that can only be done by Parliament. And so he conceded that commercial regulation should be done centrally in the British Empire. Now, you can sort of see how this begins to move into the constitutional regime. Under the U.S. Constitution, commerce among the several states and with foreign nations may be regulated centrally by Congress. But on the other hand, functions such as civil justice are supposed to be mostly at the state level. And taxation can be levied either by the state or the federal government, but we're represented in both at both levels. So you see how this moves into the constitutional regime. It's a good idea also to remind our readers that Dickinson just didn't exercise his influence on the Constitution by this kind of 20 years remote control before.
Right.
He was actually at the convention, and he impacted the drafting of the Constitution much more directly as well.
Well, and there had to be a whole lot of conversations in those 20 years. Two things that I see directly assaulted, maybe, his thoughts, and that is the 16th Amendment, the 16th and the 17th Amendment. So income taxes, which is the 16th, and then changing the senators to be elected by the people instead of by the states. Those two things, it seems like he tried to protect us from those. What do you think?
I don't think he necessarily would have been opposed to the income tax amendment. The other one, however, direct election of U.S. senators, more than anyone else, it was John Dickinson who crafted the U.S. Senate. It was Dickinson who came up with the idea of a Senate that represented the states and protected the states in the same way that the House of Lords in England protected the nobility. It was Dickinson who recommended long terms. Initially, he suggested 7 years for senators. They settled upon 6. It was Dickinson who suggested rotating terms. As you know, we elect a third of the Senate every 2 years. It was Dickinson who suggested that the state legislatures choose the U.S. senators. It was Dickinson who suggested that that every state be represented equally in the Senate. So, on the other hand, it was also Dickinson, largely, who pushed the idea that tax bills should originate only in the House of Representatives, not in the Senate. He fought very hard to get that into the Constitution and was successful.
And his reasoning?
What he said precisely was, and I'm quoting, "Experience must be our only guide. Reason may mislead us." The point he was making is that the history in Parliament and the colonies showed that a free people, or at least a free Anglo-American people, were most comfortable with the idea of tax bills originating in the people's house, in the house where people were better represented. He did propose some modifications and agree to some modifications on the British practice, but Dickinson was a classic conservative in some ways, and one aspect of his classical conservatism was to look at experience, and the experience in Britain with only the House of Commons, not the House of Lords, being able to originate tax bills. That experience had been, on balance, a very positive one. Mm-hmm. And it had been, on balance, positive in the colonies where it was adopted. And he said, if you try to change it and allow the Senate to originate tax bills, you're going to get wholesale rebellion from the people. They're going to reject the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And until the 17th Amendment, where we had direct election of senators, that really made a lot of sense because the House of Representatives was directly elected by the people. And so if they are going to spend money, they would have to be answerable to the people on a regular basis.
Yes, and not only directly elected, but also the House of Representatives is much more closely apportioned by population than the Senate.
Right.
I mean,
okay.
Wyoming, the least populous state, gets two senators, and so does California, the most populous state. The allocation by population in the House is not perfect by any means, but it's a lot closer. So if your philosophy is that revenue bills, tax bills, need to be given only by the consent of the people's representatives, the House of Representatives looks much more representative of the people than the Senate is.
Interesting. That's fascinating.
It is. Well, check out Rob Nadelson's information at robnadelson.com. He has several books out. He's always writing all the time. And he makes a good argument for the Constitution and why we need to look at it as an originalist, why we need to go back to our founding fathers and say, what were they thinking? Why did they write it this way? What was intended by them at that time? Because that's what matters, not ruling based on Supreme Court justices that change over time as politics get involved, and these Supreme Court justices think that they should be creating law rather than interpreting the law. So I love that you are teaching us why our founding fathers wrote what they wrote and how that still protects all people. Because like you said, Rob Nadelson, there's a kindness to rule of law. And so we've got to make sure we understand where our rights come from and that they're enforced.
Also, Molly, I think that listeners might want to do themselves a kindness and next week spend a day or two in Grand Lake, Colorado at Constitution Week. I don't remember the name of the URL on the website, but you enter in your browser Constitution Week, Grand Lake, you'll see the entire program and how to get there and how to get lodging and so forth. It's a real fun time. I don't know if they're going to have fireworks this year, but I know they've had them in the past, too.
They're going to have a great parade. We saw moose eating geraniums last year.
Mm-hmm. So. Oh, it's GrandLakeChamber.com.
Moose simply walk down the middle of the street all the time in Grand Lake. It's great.
Yeah. So we are at the end of our show, or just about the end of our show. And Molly, we wanted to mention that Evan, your IT guy, .com is going to be going live probably in about 10 days or so. And Evan, your IT guy, is an IT group of professionals. They're ready to provide on-demand help with computer needs. And they're really going to be helping out small businesses because you basically pay for the services that you need. And they are incentivized to make sure that they get that done in a timely manner. So it's evanyouritguy.com. And if you want a free webcam cover, you can go to their website, look at the Discover tab, scroll down, put in your information, and you'll get one of these handy-dandy little webcam covers. It's evanyouritguy.com.
Yeah, and tell them the Americhicks sent you because we love them too, and these webcam cameras are awesome.
Righto. Well, Rob Nadelson, thank you so much for being in studio with us, and definitely we would recommend people get up to U.S. Constitution Week in Grand Lake next week. You will be the speaker on Monday evening, right?
Yes.
And that's going to be fascinating because you'll be talking about John Dickinson. And again, that quote that you shared with us is, a perpetual jealousy regarding liberty is absolutely required in all free states. Slavery is ever preceded by sleep. John Dickinson.
Yep. So stay awake, everybody. Stay vigilant and stay tuned. We'll be back. This is the AmeriChicks every Monday to Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. on KDMT. Have a great night.